Coming up on No Limits, there is no bigger story in Indianapolis and central Indiana than the turmoil involving the Indianapolis Metropolitan Police Department. Citizens have died. Officers have been suspended and faced dismissal. Department leaders have been demoted. We'll talk about the police and public safety with Mayor Greg Ballard's Deputy Chief of Staff, a Democratic Indianapolis-Marion County Council member, an Indiana University law professor, and you. We'll take your calls at 1-866-476-3881, your emails at nolimits@wfyi.org, and your comments on Twitter and Facebook at WFYI.
Harley riders rode from Kokomo to the State House yesterday. They were showing support for the family of motorcyclist Eric Wells. Wells was killed in a crash with Metro Police Officer David Bizzard on August 6th. The group says they want justice and no special treatment for Bizzard. He's been charged with felony counts of reckless homicide and other charges in the crash that killed Wells and left two others critically injured. Bizzard was originally charged with DUI-related counts, but those charges were dropped. The prosecutor said the test wouldn't stand up in court because it wasn't properly done. Bizzard has been suspended and could be dismissed and still faces three felony charges. The Wells incident is the tipping point when it comes to giving the IMPD the benefit of the doubt. There have been other cases where bad behavior or just bad judgment on the part of officers have caused the department a lot of embarrassment. For instance, an IMPD officer is being recommended for firing this week after being involved in a hit-and-run accident that's being investigated. Still, it's the Wells case that really hits home. Mayor Greg Ballard has taken action. He's demoted an assistant chief, a deputy chief, and the Homeland Security commander over the mishandling of the Wells investigation. Ballard is also meeting with a group of concerned pastors today. Today on No Limits, we'll talk about the allegations against the IMPD. Is the city doing enough to end the neglectful and sometimes illegal behavior of some officers? And why the police department has so many problems in the first place.
Thank you for joining us. We're going to be talking today about the Indianapolis Metropolitan Police Department. Have no shortage of material, I am sure. And we invite you to join the discussion by calling us either at 1-866-476-3881. That's a toll-free call. Or sending us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Or sending us comments and questions via Twitter and Facebook at WFYI. I am joined today by Robert Vane, who is the Deputy Chief of Staff for Indianapolis Mayor Greg Ballard.
Thank you, Robert,
thank you for joining us. Indiana University Law School, Indianapolis Professor Fran Watson. Fran, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And we also should have on the phone, and we appreciate him coming in since he's not feeling well, Indianapolis-Marion County Council member William Oliver. Mr. Oliver, are you on the phone?
Yes, I am, and thanks. I hope I can participate with my voice. Is kind of, well, I'm kind of a little under the weather. I got some kind of virus. I don't know where I picked it up at, but I'll do the best I can.
Well,
how you doing, Robert?
Thank you.
And,
nice to hear from you, Counselor. I hope you feel better.
Well, thank you very much. After we talk today, I'm sure you do your best to make me feel my best. And also, I guess Officer Owensley is supposed to be there?
No. Okay. He was invited, and I should go through. At one point, the listeners who are tuning in may have heard the promos. Originally, we were going to have the police chief on. We got an email from him a couple of days ago withdrawing, saying that he was under oppressive meetings and that it wouldn't necessarily be probably best for him to comment at this time. We had a similar decline from Mr. Owensby, who said that he thought he probably needed to reduce his profile a little bit on this at this stage. So we are grateful to the people who did show up. This is an important public controversy discussion. We obviously hope that the police chief and some members from IMPD PD will join us at some point. But I guess right now I'd like to start and pick up what was in the news this morning. Obviously, Mayor Ballard met with the ministers this morning to talk about this situation. Robert Vane, do you have any updates? What came out of that meeting? What was said?
Sure. I wasn't actually in the meeting, but it was a frank discussion. Members of the faith community, it was, I would say, some moderate voices had put in a request to meet with the mayor. And the mayor gets requests of people to meet all the time in his meeting schedule. He meets with people constantly, whether it's mayor's nights out. He meets quarterly with a group of African-American faith and business leaders. The list goes on and on. But it was a discussion about how to make IMPD better, how to restore, which I think the mayor said in his op-ed this morning in the Star, was shaken trust and faith. I mean, we're not gonna deny the obvious. Mm-hmm. It's clearly there. But it's the kind of construction conversations the mayor has all the time, and we welcome all of them, because those conversations in the context of his office or when he goes to meet with groups is part of a larger conversation like the one we're having here and the one people are having throughout the city.
How long did the meeting last? Do you have that
information? About an hour.
About an hour, and do you know what some of the main concerns were expressed?
There were just concerns about how the fact that if people don't have public confidence is the foundation of public safety being job one. If you don't have that, and you don't have public faith and trust in the police department, then that's, dare I say, like maybe a poisonous situation for all of us. An emasculated police department doesn't help anybody. A rogue police department, on the other hand, doesn't help anyone. And Director Straub and the mayor and Chief Soselski are working very, very hard to create that balance where there's vigorous enforcement of the laws to make us all safe, and at the same time, IMPD acts within the limits of the law. And I think that was one of the points of the mayor's op-ed this morning.
Let me ask real quickly. Councilmember Oliver,
yes.
I know at least one member of your caucus has called for wholesale changes in the leadership of the police department public safety component. Is that your feeling as well, that you need?
Well, I think you're making reference to Councilman Ben Hunter.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Well, and also Brian Mayhern.
Brian Mayhern was the one.
Yeah, so, Brian Mayhern.
Can I just jump in here and just back?
Sure.
Just a little bit from the historical point of there are some citizens that have raised concerns about our protector, the police department. Over the years, we've had our laws and ordinances tweaked just a little bit at a time. Over time, to where the police merit board, the citizens complaint board, has graduated to the point, not just here in Indianapolis, but perhaps all across the country, to where these things were set up a little bit at a time, to where the public confidence, it be it Philadelphia, St. Louis, Chicago, Albuquerque, you name it, to where something happens. And quote unquote, can an audit, a company that does an audit for everyone else, when it comes time for them to do to audit their books, can they audit their own books? Do we have faith in that they can actually do that? And perhaps that's where we've had this fear that over time, that if we keep going this direction, something terrible could develop. Going back to when I came on the council in 2003 and after that, obviously the merger, the integrity of 40 years of police service, law enforcement, Sheriff Frank Anderson, so forth and so on, and then the demerger, and there was an applause that we don't want this honesty and integrity at the top, that where it's going to be carried all the way down to the bottom, immediate action, a reprimand. Not only praise given to those wonderful officers, but if one goes awry, that he would be dealt with swiftly as some guy breaking in somebody's garage. I mean, you would be dealt with and you would be prosecuted, you would be fired, so forth and so on. When the demerger took place, it was a cheer not everyone, that there was some, one, maybe more than one, that seen this as an opportunity that where we could exert ourselves even more and not come under the scrutiny of oversight. So I question that, that move right there could have been to where now we could operate with impunity.
There is a, as you point out, Council Member Oliver, William Oliver, there is a lot of history here. But what seems to have been, and we're going to talk about that more, I think, as we talk about how we got to this point. I think, though, at this moment, I'd like to ask Fran Watson to talk a little bit the straw that seems to have broken the camel's back or become the real catalyst here has been this most recent one with Officer Bizzard. And from a lawyer's perspective, from the legal perspective, Fran Watson, could you talk a little bit about kind of what brought us to this moment where it seems pretty clear to me just about everybody in the city is now talking to counsel in anticipation of some litigation. Is that correct?
I'll sure try. Okay. Hello to the listeners. When you deal with the law, you deal with the law and the facts, and the facts in this case have yet to be finalized. They're just beginning in terms of litigation. So we don't know exactly what happens, but there seems to be an agreement factually that in giving this officer Bizzard his test to determine whether or not he had alcohol in his blood when this accident causing death occurred, the test was messed up. It wasn't applied and interpreted correctly. That's been agreed. So that's factual. Legally, I think it's important that listeners know that there are two implied consent statutes in Indiana that are relevant to a situation like this. We've heard a lot in the paper about the lack of probable cause to believe the officer was drinking and therefore whether or not he should have been given implied consent rights pursuant to probable cause to believe you're drinking. There's another implied consent statute that's relevant, and that is if you're in a vehicle causing death, at that point under Indiana law, you've impliedly consented.
Let me step in so we can clarify that. Because I think, no offense to the lawyers on the line, sometimes that loses people. What you're saying is that Indiana law pretty much requires that a breathalyzer test be given if there is a fatality. So that there is no, the probable cause test there is not whether he was walking around afterwards showing signs of intoxication. It is simply, this is what you do when there's an accident, and this is what the law requires. Is that correct, or am I?
Except for a couple details, which unfortunately lawyers want to throw in.
I know. But, well, they have to work too. That's okay.
The detail is you don't have to take the test. You have to be given the implied consent. You have to be said, if you don't take this test, you will lose your license for a year, and you'll be guilty of a Class C infraction. And what you should know is that evidence is admissible in a courtroom. A refusal is admissible.
Okay, so he would have been within his rights to refuse to take the test.
Then. Sure, everybody has a right to
refuse.
But
the presumption is that that's, in effect, the same as sort of saying that you're pleading guilty to a lesser charge right there on the spot almost, right, or accepting penalties associated with that.
The law says if you refuse after you've been given your rights, then you would commit a C infraction and lose your license for a year. So in this case, there is no refusal. The documents in court says he consented.
We are running up against time on the first break here. I'd like to invite everyone to call us at 866-476-3881. We already have callers on the line. I'll ask them to stay patient, and we will get to them on the other side. Thank you.
I was at City Legal for 5 years.
You're tuned to No Limits here on WFYI 90.1 FM for your information. Programming is made possible by your membership and by Terry Lee Honda and Avon, offering options in car buying. First-time visits are for fact-finding to enable informed buying decisions with all the information. That's TLC, the Terry Lee Commitment. More at TerryLeeHonda.com. You're tuned to No Limits here on WFYI 90.1 FM.
Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a pretty tough quiz about the week's news. In fact, it's so tough that it drove Leonard Nimoy, Mr. Spock himself, to distraction.
This shouldn't be Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. This should be, come on, give me a break.
I know.
Hey, if we could do that to a Vulcan, imagine what thrills lie in store for you. Join us for this week's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the news quiz from NPR.
Saturday at 3 and Sunday at noon on 90.1 FM and HD1.
Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, and your host. We are talking today about the Indianapolis Metropolitan Police Department and issues of public safety, trust in the police. We invite you to join the discussion by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. That's a toll-free call. Or emailing us at nolimits@wfyi.org. Or you can also access us through via Facebook and Twitter at WFYI. Our guests today are Indianapolis Mayor Greg Ballard's Deputy Chief of Staff, Robert Vane, Indianapolis Marion County Council Member William Oliver, and Indiana University Law School Indianapolis Professor Fran Watson. And we've been talking, actually, right before the break, we talked about how Professor Watson was making the argument that there should have been a breathalyzer test administered or offered immediately after the accident. That did not happen. Now, Councilmember Oliver, does that trouble you at all? It sounds like that at least there was a significant point of law.
I'm not an attorney, and I can't cite the law as well as the IU professor at all, but I will dive into it this way, though. When that first occurred, I'm just a part-time legislator, a citizen. Mm-hmm. We get the news, watch the news at 11 o'clock, this is a breaking story. Well, it was an accident. My first response was that, oh, my goodness, a police car, we don't need another one of that in the newspaper, you know. And that's the way I took it. I said, this guy is on his way taking a hot call, you know. It's bad luck because they're in the paper every day, you know. That was my first response, that he was on his way, and they passed my house all the time on their way, fire trucks on their way to help somebody. And that was my attitude, pure and simple. And then it started like it was some conspiracy or something. The very next day, you say, well, the blood was tainted. Now I'm thinking about the Mark Furman, O.J. Simpson thing. What's going on here? You know, what is going on here? And then the various professors of law and all across the country start weighing in on this thing, when you're supposed to, what a police officer's rights are. Then now the public, we're really tuned into this thing now. But to say what the professor just cited, a chapter and verse, what the law is, yeah. No, we don't know that. The average citizen don't know what she just cited. So this is new to us. Okay. We're finding out that, wait a minute, this is one of our finest, our police officers. But now I feel like part of, not anything personal, but it's like some organized crime figure, you know, that, hey, we're going to beat this case. We found a loophole here.
Yeah, Councilmember.
This is what has a rotten smell to it. Okay. So, but I want to say something about public confidence that Mr. Vane has spoke to. We okay. all want to be a partner in this, Mr. Vane, and I'm looking forward to working with Councilman Hunter, who chaired the public safety, and President Vaughn. We're trying to find a solution. Hopefully, public confidence will translate into the changes, some of the things that some feel that empowered certain police officers to run amok.
Okay, let me let Robert Vane respond to that real quickly. The issue, obviously, of public trust is one that the mayor made in his op-ed piece that ran in the Star this morning. I'd like to give you a chance. Obviously, there's a little bit of a laundry list there, and Councilmember Oliver said to pick the points that you'd like to respond to.
Sure. I'll try to make it pretty brief.
And we've got callers really stacking
sure.
up.
Sure, so let me make it even briefer then.
Okay.
From the beginning of this, from both the time of the accident and the time of the information about the botched investigation, the mayor and Chief Soselsky and Director Straub have been very clear. That's been very transparent. So the mayor's op-ed this morning isn't the beginning of our awareness that things didn't go well and that the media, and that the public is upset. It's just a continuation of the same thing. Very aware the public are upset. Very aware that things need to do better. There's been a lot of reforms already initiated within IMPD. Director Straub has a record of working in the anti-corruption task force within the FBI, if my memory serves. So, I mean, he's not a newcomer to something like this. So it's not this isn't new effort on us. It's part of an ongoing effort.
Let me I'm going to ask one of our callers to join the conversation now who seems to have a question on point. Dave Walrick of Indianapolis, are you here?
Yes, sir.
Good. Thank you for joining us. I'm John Kroll, and I would invite others to join us by calling at 866-476-3881 or sending us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You have a question about public support of the Indianapolis Metropolitan Police Department. Do you want to raise that question now?
Please. It is very easy to respond to public and political pressure to sort of mount heads on the wall. And there's no question that the Indianapolis Metropolitan Police Department, like any other police department and like any large public organization, has its problems. But I'm curious what the administration is doing, what public leaders are doing and should be doing to show that they still do support the important work of the police department and that they don't lump all cops into the same category.
Well, if you is that for me?
Robert Vane, why don't you take that
if
one?
If you take a look at the mayor's op-ed this morning, I think it purposefully left, ended, I want to say on a high note, but on a note that is absolutely laudatory of the police officers. Crime is down. Violent crime is down even more. We have done all we can to honor the police while holding them accountable. It's a tough balance. The mayor will tell you it's a tough balance. But at the same time, police officers every day, just tomorrow, there's a golf tournament to benefit the family of Jake Laird, who lost his life in the line of duty. I mean, how many people every day have professions where losing your life is a plausible part of doing your job? The mayor's never lost sight of that. At the same time, police officers not only uphold the law, they serve the law. Should they be held to the highest standard? Absolutely. Your caller, the caller's a great question, and it's a tough balance, no doubt about it.
Well, Robert, let me say this about the plural term.
And this is Councilmember William Oliver.
Stay away from pluralism when something happens. He was Appalachian. He was white. He was black. He was no. This was, we're talking about a specific person that was named. Be he a bank robber, he has a name, an identity, and in this case, the occupation. The public is not painting the whole police department. There's a whole lot of great ones in my district, in the beat that I service. So that I don't. But when they're happening in sequence, back to back to back to back to back to back. So now we're trying to restore public confidence in those that remain. And we're kind of confused as to how do we restore confidence when it keeps occurring a different person, a different officer. And we started off with a tenth of 1%, and now the percentile is getting larger. So how do we restore public confidence in those officers that remain that wear the same color uniform as those that are coming before the prosecutor, almost being named every 3 or 4 days, something come up.
Yeah. Let me respond to that.
I'm not trying to kick it.
Okay.
We're going to be challenged to get a complete upside down, a turnover of thought to change the culture of the perception of our police officers all across the country, let alone in and out of Indiana.
Robert Vane, have a very quick response, and then I want to take a Twitter that we've gotten real quickly.
Sure. very quickly. You take steps to restore confidence by taking direct steps to discipline the officers involved. Officer Pylon, who was involved in the Brandon Johnson thing, recommended for termination. This office, Officer Bizarre, recommended for termination. That's how you do it. You say right now, quickly, this will not be tolerated.
And Fran Watson, you...
And I think that the police officers want us to get this job done too, Dave, that the good officers want the public administrators to find the bad officers and remove them. And that's only going to happen if we put politics aside and we build this partnership we're talking about.
Well, thank you very much. Good answer.
Well, and let me just tell you, if you talk about putting partnership aside, then Marion County Democratic Party is putting out Twitter posts that say, why is Mayor Ballard not on No Limits? Why is he hiding under his desk? So if you want to talk about putting politics aside, why don't we start right there?
Well, I'd say that's also kind of a sign,
Robert,
that we're headed into an election
aside,
year.
Right?
I say that's the way to get it done.
Okay.
Okay.
I'll tell you what, I'll bring you back next year when we are in the election here, and you guys can snipe at each other all you want. But right now I'd like to first thank Dave Walrick for joining us. I hope we answered your question. I hope you'll call again. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much.
And I'd also like to take this Twitter from Ben, which I think tries to put this somewhat in a larger perspective and get us away from the questions of legality. My apologies to Professor Watson over here. But talk more about sort of the policy and the culture of IMPD. And he says, how will IMPD address the reality of drug and alcohol abuse on the job, regardless of whether the blood test is admissible or not? I mean, do we have an idea whether this is a persistent problem? These are obviously high-stress jobs.
Sure. Let's just talk just very quickly
about
what's been done just in the last, since Director Straub has been in. Initiated internal investigations, actually beefed up his internal investigation staff, established a professional standards division. He did hired Rick Height, who's known throughout the country as Deputy Director for Training and Strategic Initiatives. Public Safety Advisory Group established, looking for best practices from international city and county management organizations. Has asked for FBI assistance on the Bizarre investigation, asked for FBI assistance on the investigation into Brandon Johnson. So there's no acknowledgement. There's no blue wall. There's no stonewalling. He realizes, the mayor realizes, it's got to get better. No one's saying it doesn't have to get better. We are saying that.
Yeah, I think that as I take the spirit of this question, though, it's more, less how do we punish these guys, but if they do have drug and alcohol problems, you know, what are we doing about that?
Well, the mayor said that, part of it is the procedures and the policies I just went through, but the mayor said at the news conference right after the accident happened, somebody knew about this fella. If he indeed had a problem, the mayor said somebody knew about it. Mayor's 23 years in the Marine Corps. I was 3 years in the Army. You live in close quarters. You know. You work with people every day. You know. And he said, those people, those frontline leaderships or those friends have to step forward. And if they had stepped forward, you never know how that could have changed history. And he said very clearly, that's important. Somebody knew and didn't step forward, and that was troubling to him personally.
Fran Watson, you've been nodding your head while he's talking. Do you have something you want to add? Or?
Well, you know, the public citizen reading the newspaper thinks somebody knew by the fact that the test was done wrong. So if you know, that's a good reason to do a test in a way that can't be used in a courtroom.
Well, I'm going to take another call right now and ask, the name has disappeared. Are you on the line? Caller? Hello?
Hello.
Yes, this is John Krall. You're listening to No Limits. Alan?
Yes.
Could you you have a question about or a comment about this situation? Would you care to share it?
Oh, yeah. My name is Jeffrey. Can you hear me?
Oh, Jeffrey. I apologize.
That's correct. Well, I mean, I've been reading about the trust in the police officer, and I think I was a victim of bad policing work. It was an issue that I had an accident back in January, and I got arrested for DUI. That's after there was no swab test, and the breathalyzer test came in valid sample. They arrested me still for DUI. The whole situation with the police officer, the conduct, and from the time in the field to the police station, kind of made me think about the trust that I had for the police officer and his conduct. So when I look and hear the situations with this police guy who just killed somebody, and they kind of fumbled with his evidence. I feel like, why should I trust a police officer to come over to my aid if something has happened, when I know that they'll make prejudgments and then do shady work that made me, in my case, lose a job, get arrested, and still going to court for still 9 months from January up to now, and my case is not solved.
Well, thank you. Thank you for calling. We're going to talk about this. I'm going to take the thank you, Jeffrey, for calling. I appreciate you sharing your story. I want to talk a little bit about that larger point, because really what he's saying here is that there were double standards applied, that he's treated in one way and a police officer is another. If that's the case, what does that do?
Well, we've all seen or know, mm-hmm. or maybe ourselves have been arrested or stopped for DWI or a speeding ticket, something like that. The officer has a radar gun, and everybody's okay. We abide by that, and just a rule of law, and we go and pay the ticket, and without question. We may argue that the accuracy of the gun and whatnot. But at the end of the day, you got to pay the ticket, and that's just a given. Now we have a quote-unquote a police officer that was stopped by a radar gun, and he says, wait a minute. There's a law that says that radar gun, when the last time it's been, and he starts going through the law that we used to accept on the face, but this is the perception that on the drink and drive and whatnot, that what we used to accept, we just blow into the thing, accept it. We don't have the money to get a big-time lawyer and all this and that, and we kind of just go along and go through the program of DWI. But in this case, the police officer himself or his attorney start going and has already researched the law. Hey, wait a minute. You can't get my client for that. Wait a minute. We've been ascribing to this process for years, but now a police officer, he gets his license back because we found a loophole in the law that they knew that was there at the outset. If you follow a certain course of action, that public perception and confidence that when we are pulled over today or any time, you know, we're kind of suspect about the reason and the justification, and we'll hold up in a court of law, certainly against a citizen. But if a police officer is pulled over for speeding or DWI or something like this, then that is why Mr. Vane and the rest of us, what can we do to change the perception of the operation of those that are sworn to protect and serve, that when they are enforcing the law against the rest of us, that they will ascribe to come under the same law that's used against me, you, or anyone else, that they would succumb to the same thing, and we wouldn't be in the situation we're in now.
Council Member Oliver, I want to give Robert Vane, I want to actually throw this question to you a little bit. What steps, so far it struck me that there's a certain amount of damage control going on here and some cleaning up. Would you agree that there need to be some significant cultural changes within the Indianapolis Metropolitan Police Department? Fran Watson said a few minutes ago that the good officers want the bad ones to be held accountable. Is there a culture within the police department, though, that is making that possible now, or is that a change that still has to come?
My first job out of graduate school.
We've got about 2 minutes left, too.
I'll say it in a minute, and maybe Fran can come in behind me. My first job out of graduate school was working at the Marion County Sheriff's Garage. I worked there for 2.5 years, getting pool cars for people and talking to cops every day. And I saw a few of them who I got cars for and stuff in just the last few days. They're all upset. Anyone who thinks that the police aren't upset about this, the victims are, the mayor is, counselors are, anyone you want to name, and changes have to be made. Yes, they have to be cultural changes. Yes, they have to be.
15 seconds. So how about if we pick this up on the other side? Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Hello?
Your You're tuned to No Limits here on WFYI 90.1 FM for your information. This program is made possible by your membership and by iSolar Indiana Week in Review text and email alerts. Receive subjects to be discussed sent prior to each week's show. Registration for iSolar Indiana Week in Review text and email alerts at WFYI.org/IWIR. You can tune into Fresh Air this evening at 7 o'clock.
Two chefs, two unlikely friends, two very different careers and philosophies. Anthony Bourdain, chef and author of the New York Times bestseller Kitchen Confidential, and Eric Ripert, French chef of New York's finest four-star restaurant, Le Bernardin. Hear them share stories and muse on the place of food in our personal, community, and global life. Thursday night, September 30th at 7 at Clues Memorial Hall, organized by the Spirit and Place Festival, the Indiana Humanities Council, and Indie Talks. Ticket information is online at indietalks.info.
I am John Krall, and you are listening to No Limits. I'm the director of the Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism and your host. I am also inviting you to call us at 1-866-476-3881. I'm delighted that so many of you have done that and that we have people waiting. We will try to get to them. You also can email us at nolimits@wfyi.org or follow us on Twitter and Facebook at WFYI. Robert Vane, I apologize. I cut you off right before the break. I wanted to see you were actually building toward your closing there, and I interrupted pretty rudely.
So. No, that's fine. I just was going to say that everyone acknowledges changes have to be made, whether they're cultural, procedural, maybe, you know, perhaps legal. That's not my field. In terms of supervisory expectations, training, everyone's on board, including the mayor, including every line cop I've talked to in the last 2 weeks, and I know several of them. So whether it's Councilor Oliver saying that or you or Fran or the public, there's no dispute.
Okay, so we're in agreement there. We have an email from Josh Peel that I'm going to toss to Fran Watson because it deals with a relatively complicated point of law, but... That's the reason you were invited. So
I'll give it a try.
That one's in your wheelhouse. It says, please clarify the issue with the blood test results. I'm under the impression that the organization that took and tested his blood is the same one used to screen commercial drivers to comply with federal regulations. If that is in fact the case, to say that the blood tests are not accurate is not true. Isn't it more the case that there is simply a legal loophole? What's your immediate reaction? I know that's a rather complicated point of law there.
Hey, my immediate reaction is, good question, Josh. And the umbrella answer is, in all cases, if you're going to offer a scientific result, which is a blood test analysis, they tested his blood to get the degree of alcohol in it, and so the proportion of alcohol. To use that, it has to be reliable, and to be reliable, that includes taking it the right way. So as far as the issue I know or have heard, though we don't know all the facts, I've heard it has to do with the way in which the test was drawn. So it's not so much the testing of the fluid as the way in which it was drawn. But it has to be reliable, which means it has to be done the right way by someone qualified doing it correctly. And I understand that's the issue with the admissibility of the blood test result.
I'm going to take a caller right now. Alan? Alan?
Hello.
Yes. Are you with, good to have you with us. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, John. I enjoy the program. My comment is the officers that made the arrest, if they in fact took him to a wrong place or whatever, I feel that those officers should also have some kind of punishment, because then that lets the public know that the officers are not allowed to take one of their own to the wrong place specifically to beat the charge.
Robert Vane, do you want to speak to that a bit? I know that there have been some consequences, clearly.
There have been, and I have not been told definitively that those consequences or disciplinary action is over. You know, you're talking about speed. I've had, unfortunately, several speeding tickets. And you know what? I get passed by police officers going faster than I am all the time. That is a point to be made that resonates with the public. But in this case, it is somewhat different. I understand, and I think the police understand, if you talk to them, the public, even before this, you know, is skeptical of them. We're the United States. We were born from the fact that we rebelled against authority. That's never gone away. And that's ingrained into our, I think, into our DNA. If procedures weren't followed, I think they should be held to account. And I think Director Straub and the mayor would say the exact same thing.
Well, could I ask the question of Attorney Watson, please? Is it a long reach for me to state, or for anyone to state, that when you knowingly, if you knowingly in advance change the way the evidence is being collected, is it a long reach to say obstruction?
Well, it presumes also, yeah, if I can jump in real quickly, I mean, it sounds like what that's Council Member William Oliver speaking, that we're really talking about what probably would be some sort of criminal activity.
I would not say it would be a long reach. It's whether, you know, the first question is what are the reasonable inferences? That's a legal way of looking at it. And
okay.
I think there are inferences you can take that lead you in the direction that make that not the longest of stretches. We don't know yet, though. The facts aren't in the public record.
And what? How will they get in the public record?
My
grandfather was a police officer, and one of the first things he told us when we were kids was, ignorance is no excuse. So whether they knowingly took him to the wrong place or whether they did take him to the wrong place, either way, it's an infraction and allows him some sort of loophole. So I just think they should be dealt with so that the public knows that cops who help cops, right or wrong, they're going to have to suffer the consequences too.
Alan, thank you for joining
thank
us.
Thank you very kindly.
Comment. Thank you. We also have Philip on the line. Philip, are you with us?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi. Thank you for calling. I'm John Kroll. We have Council Member William Oliver, Deputy Chief of Staff to Mayor Ballard, Robert Vane, and Indiana University Law School Indianapolis Professor Fran Watson with me. You have a question?
Yeah, my question kind of goes towards the prosecutor, and that is that I know that if I or a regular citizen had been in this situation and the blood had been taken wrongly, the prosecutors would have taken me to court anyway, hoping that either my lawyer didn't notice it or that the judge would allow it admissible anyway. But for the police officer, they just said, well, we know it's not admissible, therefore we're just not going to take it to court. And if they took it to court and the judge then made it inadmissible, wouldn't they then have grounds for appeal?
That sounds like a law professor question to me. Fran Watson, would they have?
I think, Philip, the answer is yes. They could have, as far as the record now shows, we don't know why the prosecutor chose to drop the drunk driving charge. Well, there was a ruling as to the license suspension, but no ruling as to the admissibility of the blood test results. So we don't know on what basis the prosecutor made their decision that they could not use that as evidence.
So this sounds like it goes farther than the police. I mean, isn't the prosecutor involved in this whole cover-up of the accident?
No, I can't say that because I don't know on what basis Mr. Breezy made his decision that he can't admit that evidence. He did still maintain the reckless homicide charge, which is based on reckless driving.
But that's almost impossible to prove to the police officer because now there's no drunk driving, and it's just a matter of him doing his duty in the course of his job.
Well, you're right in some ways, but on the other hand, if you the basic rule you tell your children is the person behind is responsible for the accident. And if you're going too fast and you can't stop, even on a police run, that's not reasonable. So is it going to be harder to prove recklessness without a blood test? Absolutely. Is it going to be impossible? I wouldn't say that yet.
Well, my point is that it sounds like the prosecutor is involved in the whole cover-up of the accident, too, since he's dropped the DUI charge, even though the blood test hasn't been shown to be admissible in court. So
I hear your point.
Philip, thank you. Thank you for calling.
I think using
– go ahead,
I understand this fellow's comments, and he sounds like he's really paid attention to it, but let's just be very careful, with all due respect to him, using the words cover up. I mean, you're basically asserting that the police officers purposely and purposefully mishandled this case to cover up a felony. And if that's the kind of accusations that we're going to talk about with the police officers, look, we've all seen Serpico. We've all seen, you know, read bad stories. And you know, the crooked cop is often, you know, the person who gets revealed at the end of the movie to be the person behind all the crime. So I can understand that in the culture. And like I said, this gentleman obviously knows what he's talking about in terms of what's happened so far. But I just think if we want to do what everybody says we want to do, and that is have a thorough review while at the same time honoring and restoring faith in the police department, to say cover up, that's just, I think that's a very, very difficult charge to throw around.
But doesn't that, and I want to emphasize, none of the panelists, just a moment, Council Member Oliver, just a moment. Just a moment.
They perceived something.
I didn't blame him. I said it's a very, very, very difficult. That's a tough charge to throw around, that people intentionally covered up a crime to help one of their own. And that's not conducive to the higher and healing discussion.
We've got just a few minutes left, and I want to deal with a couple of these questions. But I think I want to pick up on what Robert Vane was just saying, and I think probably make some of the points that the Council Member Oliver might raise too, and that is the fact that people are using words like that. Does that indicate the scope of the challenge laid out in Mayor Ballard's op-ed this morning? And basically, you know, what is the fix now? How do we turn the corner on this thing? You said earlier in the program, everybody agrees that the trust has been broken. How do we restore it? And how long a process is that likely to be?
Well, I'm hoping Robert Vane would give me a call when he go off the air, and I'll be meeting with Ben Hunter and members of his caucus. I hope he meet with members of my caucus, and we also on the same public safety. That's the beginning, along with President Vaughn. That's the beginning, and hopefully that they will we'll all be open-minded and as we move forward.
Fran Watson wants to make a real quick point.
And I think we'll all agree that the process is going to be helped if the citizens, the listeners, stay involved, because that's what's pushing it now. People are outraged, and that will cause the powers that be to listen.
It shows also, one of the emails we've gotten asks basically if high school athletes are required to take drug alcohol tests, why not IMPD? Is that a valid question, Robert Vane, do you think?
Sure, all these questions are valid. I mean, and I certainly didn't attack the caller who said cover up. I just merely said that discussing the making the charge that there was a cover up is something that needs to be done, I think, with some caution and a lot of forethought. And I don't know, I don't believe, maybe I don't want to speak for him, Counselor Oliver believes there's a cover-up, that the police intentionally botched the investigation to protect one of their own. You're not saying that, are you, Counselor?
I'm saying that the perception, or we wouldn't be having this conversation talking about reform. Why are we talking about having reformed and restoring public confidence? If that not be the case, hey, if just something happened, you guys not being understandable. But we're actually going to the mat on this one, Mr. Vane, meaning that we're going to open up everything and examine it. Now, why are we doing that? Because of public perception.
And I agree with that. Also, it has more as much to do with the fact that the accident happened as much as the investigation.
If it had not happened, would we be having this conversation?
I think that the investigation absolutely enhanced public interest in it, but it started with the accident, and that is something that needs to be reviewed as well. There's no dispute, no dispute.
Well, let me throw something else in here. If this had been, quote unquote, someone just passing through the city of Indianapolis with no roots, no anything, sitting there, no parent that's going to say, wait a minute, I want to look at this thing, doesn't look good to me, you know, as a father, you know, the lady out there in a coma. I mean, these people said, this doesn't look, if it had been somebody we did not know or someone that didn't, that's going to make sure that at least justice, some satisfactory answers come up, perhaps this too would have been just something that happened and we'd be done with it. but it was almost like a perfect storm.
We've got about a little bit less than 3 minutes left.
Because it's a perfect storm.
No, nobody's blaming the public. I merely stated the obvious, and that is if you start talking about making accusations of cover-up, we've gone nowhere in the long journey to restore public trust. Does that mean that IMPD shouldn't be fully investigated internally and that the FBI shouldn't be involved? Of course not. The mayor and Director Straub have said that. No one is saying that these things shouldn't happen at all.
Well, let me get back to the question we got via email, which was, would breathalyzers, random alcohol tests basically for IMPD, and that another point was made, should it just be done at roll call every morning to make sure that they're not impaired before they go out? They operate vehicles. They also have weapons. Is that a fair presumption? I'm going to toss this one to the law professor, Fran Watson.
The thing that comes to my mind first is it's kind of scary to think that we have to go to roll call and breathalyze and drug test police officers. But when you're in a situation like this, sure, that would solve the problem to some extent. The issue is going to be police officers' rights, and, you know, the union has a contract, and that would have to be negotiated as part of that contract, I would assume.
We've got about two minutes left, Robert Vane. What do you think the mayor would support the idea of doing breathalyzer tests for
I've not heard that discussed, and I've not been in the room when Director Straub and his internal team have talked about the kind of reforms they're looking at. But the mayor was clear. He's been clear from day one into his op-ed today. The police need to be held to the highest standard. We have several. My brother's an airline pilot. Their rules about alcohol consumption that go along with, you know, how long he has to wait after he flies and so on and so forth. If that's in part of the higher standards, that's something the mayor and Director Straub will decide on. But I tell you what, I mean, Fran's absolutely right. There's obviously union considerations right here. I mean, we don't do the same thing for teachers. I mean, how far is it going to go? And pilots or so on and so forth. But there is no doubt that the mayor has been out in front on this and saying, we need to heal, we need to have a conversation, we need to have the highest standards, and we need to adhere to the rule of law. And he's been saying that, and he's going to continue to say that.
We've got a little bit less than a minute left. Real quickly, what, Fran Watson, what is one concrete step that could be taken right now to restore trust, do you think? Very quickly.
A concrete step, working together. You know, again, I said it, set aside the politics, quit trying to make political points out of this huge problem that threatens the trust in the police, and get on with getting it done.
I would like to thank you. Thank you. I'd like to thank all of you, Deputy Chief of Staff to Robert Vane for joining us. Indianapolis Marion County City Council Member William Oliver, thank you for calling us from your sick bed. We
hope you feel
that.
Better.
Thank you.
And Fran Watson, thank you for joining us. Good
thank
show.
You.
Thank you very much. Thank you all for listening.
Thank you for having me, sir.
No Limits is a production of WFYI Radio, 90.1 FM and HD1. Executive Director Mary Hartnett. Producer Sharon Allseth. Interactive Media Coordinator Melissa Davis. Technical Producer Cedric Freeman. And Board Engineer Josh Hamig. We invite you to join us each Thursday at noon for No Limits, and you can listen online at WFYI.org.